This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Monday the 24th of July. I'm Shannon Power, your host on tonight's Informer.
And I'm Dean Arcuri. On tonight's show, we'll speak to artist Ethan Christie. He'll tell us about the challenges and realities of gender fluid expression and the understanding of trans identities after he entered his artwork in the Laird's Men on Men art competition.
We'll also look at the results of the 2017 Melbourne Gay Community Periodic Survey. The survey was released today. It showed the highest number ever of men on HIV treatments and how HIV prevention is changing the way gay men are looking after their sexual health.
But first, we kick off with the weekend's AFL Pride match.
On Saturday night, more than 34,000 people packed into the Sydney Cricket Ground on a cold winter's night. They were there to not only watch St Kilda Saints battle it out against the Sydney Swans in their Round 18 clash, but to celebrate the AFL's second annual Pride game. The SCG was given a rainbow makeover. The stadium was decked in rainbow-coloured lights. The 50-metre lines went from white to rainbow, and even the goal umpires got in on the action, waving rainbow flags whenever one of the teams scored.
Shannon travelled to Sydney to speak to members of the LGBTI community about their thoughts on the AFL's Pride game. From AFL versions to rabid fans, everyone was getting in on the action. Steve Warren was one of the more excited Sydney Swan fans. Steve is a 78er. They were the brave men and women who took to Oxford Street in July 1978 to protest for the rights of LGBTI people. Here's Steve with Shannon.
Actually, it was a fellow 78er that introduced me to AFL in the first place. So if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have watched a game one day up in Lismore and was totally attracted to the way that the game was played. But I just think it's amazing to listen to the diversity statements given today. Who would have ever thought years later we'd be going to a Swans game showing our pride?
You marched up Oxford Street in the first Mardi Gras through, you know, down to Darlinghurst, and now we're in Darlinghurst supporting the footy. Can you get your head around that?
It is a bit ironic being so close to Taylor Square, but I never would have dreamed that it would be a day that we would be treated so more equally. Even though we've still got a long way to go, it's just been amazing to move this far.
Who's going to win tonight?
Of course, it's going to be the Swans. I spent all night making their banner.
Oh, I can't wait to see it.
It's going to be an amazing banner. You'll love it.
Can you give me the scoop? What does the banner say?
Well, I can do what it say, but shall we give you a hint? Rainbow Swans.
So is it going to be super gay?
Of course.
I'm at a pre-game function hosted by Rainbow Swans, and there are supporters here from lots of different clubs, not just the Swans and Saints. One of those supporters is Melody Gardner, who is a huge GWS Giants supporter. Now, Melody has come behind enemy lines, so to speak, to attend the Rainbow Swans event, and we find out just why Melody has come down to this pre-game event.
Lovely to support Pride game initiative. I think it's amazing to have rainbows and football, all my favourite things. Walked in just before and said walking into enemy territory. Could feel everyone's eyes on us as we walked in, my sister Lucinda and I. But very soon everyone was coming up and saying hello and, you know, great to have you here and offering to buy us a drink. It's just such a lovely atmosphere.
And I imagine it's a bit about everyone's in rainbow fever, for lack of a better term.
Oh, definitely. There's people from all different clubs here today, from all the different rainbow and LGBTI supporter groups, and it's just this amazing feeling to see the AFL and see clubs going out there and supporting LGBTQ people and just being there for their supporters is amazing.
Matt Ackerston was the former editor of samesame.com.au. He's a journalist that's been around the queer scene for a really long time. But tonight he's going to his first ever AFL game. He's here at the Rainbow Swans event, volunteering at the Marriage Equality table. And he's going to tell us why he's decided to go to his first AFL game tonight. Matt, how many footy games have you, or AFL games have you been to in your life?
Let me just think about it. No, this will be my first one tonight.
Why are you going? Do you know anything about the AFL?
No, I know nothing. I think there's a ball that they like kick around, and there's two teams, and that's about it really. And it's Sydney versus Melbourne, which I always adore, that little fission they have, those cities. But yeah, I'm here to be part of it because of it's the Sydney Swans, the Rainbow Swans and Pride game, and lots of rainbow scarves around. So I thought I'd get my friends together and get lots of seats and go and support it.
Oh well, so you're not even being dragged along by an AFL lover. You took the initiative yourself, and was that because of Pride game?
Yeah, just for the Pride game, just to see what it will be like. Sometimes I just need an excuse to do something different, so this was the excuse.
Chris Pycroft was a former co-convener of the New South Wales Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby. He's also a massive Sydney Swans fan. He travelled down to Melbourne last year for the inaugural Pride game. We're at the game now. Let's find out what he thinks of it so far. Chris Pycroft, there's about 6 or 7 minutes to go in the fourth quarter of the second Pride game. What's your take on it?
Look, it's been a really good game from the Swans. It's been good to see, I think, all round their support both on and off the field for the Pride game today. And the fact that we could come home with a win is just fantastic for all the fans.
And you've been to both Pride games now. Why do you enjoy coming so much?
Look, for me, having grown up watching AFL, it's nice to see the sport actually show that it is welcome and inclusive and supportive of everyone in our community.
And what's been your favourite part of tonight's game?
I think it's just a celebration and seeing so many new people come to an AFL game for the very first time and then feeling accepted and welcome. It's fantastic to see.
Tonight we've heard a lot of people scream, "Yas, Queen." Do you think that might become a more common part of footy vernacular?
Oh, look, he is hoping, and with every Pride game we'll make it louder and louder.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
This year, Australia's oldest and only male-only pub, The Laird, changed the guidelines of the Men on Men art competition. Previously billed as a celebration of masculinity, this year they acknowledged the diversity of its customers and welcomed cis and trans male artists to submit work expressing their experience.
One artist was Ethan Christie, who submitted works with subjects naked and their faces obscured, exploring being locked out from our community and culture when you are gender fluid and trans. This carried an even greater weight when exhibited in the male-only space of The Laird.
Our own Dean Arcuri spoke to Ethan about having a voice as an artist and expressing having that voice when it's taken away by a community that tries to pigeonhole your gender. The main work we talk about in this interview is that of a gender-diverse trans woman. But we start our interview at a point in which Dean misgenders the subject and the artwork.
It's important for all of us to understand when, why, and how misgendering can occur, and the greater effect that that can have. And I can't think of a better place to start than thinking that the subject of a work of art is a trans man, and I've gotten it wrong. Here's my talk with Ethan Christie.
Okay, so let me correct you.
Thank you.
The work was of a trans woman, gender diverse trans woman. Yes, which puts a spanner in your works.
That really does.
Yeah. And the point of that was to showcase their 30 years in their masculine identity. So they've spent 30 years in this body, and then they transitioned, and they got of the gay community, of male communities, of speaking about masculinity.
Even of speaking.
Yeah. So they don't have they seem to be, you know, struggling with that, and I wanted them a part of it to actually really push the boundaries. Most people thought the person was trans male.
I did.
Yeah.
In this interview, I did.
So, so that even is more powerful in the fact that we're this kind of gender fluid person is standing there, and we're already gendering them. You know? They were very amazing to do it, and I put them on the spot and asked them if they wanted to go in the lead.
The men on men are competition. Yeah. And that's... What was their response to that?
They were like, if you can get me in, it would be amazing.
So they just assumed there's no way. It's not
possible. They just assumed that.
Was that because of their past... well, their experiences with the doors closing in our community that closed for them when they went through that journey.
Yeah. And it happened to me when I was... and it was really reflective on my journey as well, because I had that in the lesbian community. So as soon as I started transitioning and becoming masculine, I had no voice. I had no voice as a female. I had no voice as a past female. I've still got 22 years as a woman, you know, and I still have... It's a period journey, you know, so it's at a specific date that I can talk about my own experience as a woman, but I still have that experience, and to lock me out from that was quite brutal.
It just must be awful.
Yeah, losing work, losing jobs, you know, it was quite a very big slap in the face.
What was it? Was there anything specific about the work that would make it not?
Well, because the person identifies as female,
yeah,
and coming into a male-only space, so it was automatically assumed that I wouldn't be able to get the work in.
Yeah.
So, which was great to challenge that boundary. Yeah.
So, what was the response when you brought the work in?
It was all been amazing. Like, a lot of people have...
Were you concerned?
Yeah, I was concerned. That's why I talked to the artist, like the model first, out of courtesy, to say, do you really want to be put in this position? Even though their name and or their identity is obscured,
yes,
but still, some people will identify and through tattoos and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So I wanted to make sure that they were solid in their understanding of what I was putting them through. And what kind of result could happen? It could be a backlash.
True. Like, I think that's the nature of art.
Yeah.
And the boundary that it challenges and pushes. But so, what was your experience when the work was hanging on the shelf and a part of the exhibition?
Yeah, everyone's amazed. So, and it was a really good, nice step for the Laird as well, just to put in more diversity into their. Overall, I was very, very happy with it.
What can we as a cisgender person, or anyone as a cisgender person, learn or know or understand from your experience to maybe change the way they...
I think assumption is the biggest problem.
Yeah.
You know, I think when you stand there and start to gender someone, if you could just step back for a moment and just remove gender from the equation. So pronouns are a very big thing.
Yeah.
It's they, them. You know, everyone feels a bit uncomfortable with that. But if you start doing that in the process of doing that to everyone, not just, you know, do it for every person that you meet, you start to remove the kind of stereotypes, your mental process of going through gender starts to get removed. And that's really key, you know. And it's a small process. It's very hard. You know, it's very hard to do.
Anything worth it is hard, though.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is worth it. It is very much worth it. Because, it, you know, it takes away the assumption that you step into a conversation or you step into a connection with someone and you assume automatically by their appearance or by what they have, what they haven't got.
Through your art process and through what you've learned through this experience, what are you hoping to build on? Is your identity or the identity of others something that is really prominent to the work that you do, or is it just what you're expressing, what you're going through now?
It's all the way through my work. So it's key to my voice, and it's a key to allowing other people to voice their own identity as well. So I'm putting myself on the line, which I always do anyway throughout my work, because it's very hard to get things across without actually putting your body up as an expression, especially gender, because people are just, you know, as soon as you're clothed, if you meet a certain stereotype, you're done. People just look at you and walk away and that kind of stuff. But as soon as you start unraveling that or unpacking that within a kind of visual context, you start to really see the kind of complexities involved in gender and why people need a voice in that.
What did you feel was challenging about it?
In regards to the layer, bringing up that someone has a history of masculinity instead of an ongoing kind of dialogue in masculinity, and having people understand that history is very relevant and has a voice within the community. You know what I mean? This kind of interlocking a person's journey and their kind of voice that they have and their kind of story they have is quite important to the whole community. You know? It's not just a one-sided conversation.
Do you feel like the majority, I mean, through your own experience and through the experience of what we're talking about in the artwork, the journey of the doors that people close behind you when you're coming into who you are, is that ongoing? Is that, has that stopped?
No, it doesn't stop. The doors don't stop closing. It depends on how much you want to unravel yourself in front of other people to how much it closes or uncloses or, you know, opens or, you know, that kind of stuff. And that's the purpose of my work. That is totally the purpose of my work, to create kind of a challenge to normativity, this kind of normative, and it's going across to even the trans community as well, this kind of acceptance that happens if you pass or the acceptance that happens if you don't pass. Even within the trans, there's kind of hierarchical kind of positions of being transgender, gender fluid, and they're starting to segregate into different community groups, which is fine. Everyone needs to know that they belong, but we're also reinforcing what our society is reflecting. You know, that kind of normative kind of male, female boxes, and we all just step into those. And through hormones and through all that kind of processes, it's, you know, some people don't want to do hormones. And they should have a right to say no. You know, if they don't want to have a chest surgery, or, you know, they've got a right to say at what point they feel comfortable and self-identify instead of socially identify. I see gender as a 3D spectrum. I don't see it as a tipping scale. This whole concept of male and female tipping scale to neutrality, like neutral kind of centre in the centre, and then there's tipping scale of male and female, I don't see it like that. I see it as a 3D kind of world where we all are placed at different positions, and we could express masculinity and femininity and be presenting as male or be presenting as female or non-gendered, you know, at all. And it's a quite when you start looking at it on that level, it removes it from pushing people on either scale.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
Today, the results of this year's Melbourne Gay Community Periodic Survey were released. It showed a growing community confidence in the efficiency of biomedical HIV prevention strategies amongst men who have sex with men.
Over 90% of men living with HIV on treatment have achieved an undetectable viral load, and this year's results recorded the highest ever level of HIV testing, which is continuing the upward trend over the last several years.
Richard Keane, president of Living Positive Victoria, joins us now to talk about the results.
Richard, what were some of the standout results from this year's survey?
For Living Positive Victoria, straight away when I looked at the results of the survey, the thing that jumped out at me was that 97% of men living with HIV that responded to the survey and are on treatments have achieved an undetectable viral load, and that's absolutely massive.
Why?
That is absolutely massive. It shows that people are not only knowledgeable, all the barriers to treatments in Victoria have been removed in the last couple of years. We used to have a certain amount of T-cells that you had to have before you could access treatments and other things like that. All of those barriers have been removed, and we now have 97% of those men who've responded in this survey achieving an undetectable viral load, which means that their forward transmission of HIV is greatly reduced. These people are undetectable, they are considered uninfectious, and cannot transmit the virus forward sexually.
So can you give us any indication of why that number has jumped to 97%? Is it a huge jump from last year? If so, why?
It's a significant increase from last year. It's about an 8% increase from last year. I think there's been a repeated campaign over the last few years around engaging people on effective treatments, particularly, as I said earlier, with those barriers being removed. We're able to engage people about the effectiveness of treatment. And on receiving a HIV diagnosis, the sooner you start effective treatments, the better your long-term outcomes are going to be. And really, it's by protecting ourselves, we protect others. So by maintaining our own health, all of a sudden, the data that's coming back around undetectable and the reduction of forward transmission of HIV means that by looking after ourselves, we're looking after others as well. And it's an amazing change in the way not only other people see people living with HIV, but how we see ourselves.
These results are finally creating a different space for the education of people who may not understand the work and effort that HIV positive people have to do to be able to maintain their health and create a better environment for all. Isn't that true?
Absolutely true. And I commend all people. But I think also, too, what this gives us is the opportunity to engage in that group of people that maybe have had, in testing in particular, that may have had a risk event some time ago, maybe put it in the back of their mind because of the stigma and discrimination surrounding HIV that still exists today. They've put off taking that test out of fear. I encourage all of those people that might be listening to Joy who found themselves in that situation to go and to get tested and to find out their HIV status, because you can access effective treatments, you can live a full, productive life. It's never been a better time to know your HIV status. And the other thing in that study that really jumps out at us is the number of people. 78% of those people said that they had been tested for HIV in the last 12 months. So that testing message is starting to get through to those people who may be engaged in some risk activities. But I think we really need to double down on that now, because I really do believe that when you look at PrEP as well, which is pre-exposure prophylaxis, which is a preventative measure for negative people, I really think that what seemed like almost a dream 3 or 4 years ago when we started to look at ending HIV might be a distinct possibility in this country, and it's an amazing place to be.
So I think that's a really interesting statistic that's come up. So we know that in 2016, 6% of people were using PrEP. Now it's jumped up to 16%, and I can only presume that is because of the PrepX trial that's being run in Victoria. But what is next? Now that we have the results of this survey, what are the new or next priorities for HIV in Victoria?
Oh, I think from Living Positive Victoria's viewpoint, we need to remind everybody that while this is an major breakthrough and undetectable viral load is the aim for all people for their long-term health, there are still people living with HIV, and my status doesn't change today just because this information has come through, and some people bear a disproportionate impact on their lives from stigma and discrimination of HIV, and we'll still be focusing very strongly on that. But on the upside, I guess when you look at these figures, we really are pushing and trying to engage the federal government around putting PrEP on the pharmaceutical benefits scheme so it can be accessible to all people rather than small groups and people that are lucky enough to get into a trial. We've got great support across our community, our collaboration with our partners and things. I think this needs to be a group effort to finally end HIV in this country, but I think we're in a very strong position, and it's just about continuing to break down those barriers, engaging around stigma and discrimination to try and reduce that so people feel like they can go and get a test without having to worry too much about what that result is going to be. And I think we can finally, maybe just finally, move beyond that old Grim Reaper campaign of 30 years ago and really engage our community on an updated model of what it's like living with HIV today. And the outcomes that people have are very, very different than that time.
Definitely. And we know that, you know, the various HIV organisations are pushing to have the PrEP drugs on the pharmaceutical benefits scheme, and that review is coming up very soon where both Truvada and the generic Mylan drugs are up for review to be put onto the PBS, which will make PrEP much more affordable in Australia for people who aren't on the trial or who might be importing it. Do we have any scoop or any idea which kind of way the board might make a decision, or do we have to wait for the day where we get the result?
I think we have to wait for the day. I mean, all community based organisations, Positive Voice organisations and AIDS councils are working very strongly together through our national peaks to engage the federal government and to engage pharmaceutical companies around getting that access to the pharmaceutical benefits scheme for those drugs that you mentioned. I think it's really, really important, because we might look at these statistics here today in Victoria and say, and it is, it's something to be proud of, and it's something that our whole community should be proud of. But then I was recently down in Tasmania where they don't have access to PrEP through trials and other things like that. So there's still pockets in other states, and the Northern Territory's the same, still not as accessible in rural areas. So accessing it through the PBS will allow equitable access to all Australians.
That's it for another episode of The Informer. We'll be back tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. to bring you the day's big news from an LGBTIQ perspective. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform.
We'd like to thank tonight's guests, Ethan Christie, Steve Warren, Matt Atkinson, Melody Gardner, Chris Pycroft and Richard Keane. And we'd like to thank our extended Informer team for putting together tonight's show. If you love the news and would like to become part of the Joy 94.9 family, we have a few volunteer vacancies on the Informer team. We're looking for volunteer presenters, producers, panellists, podcasters and social media masters. If you love the Informer and would like to get involved, we'd love to have you. Email us at theinformer@joy.org.au. My name's Dean Arcuri.
And I'm Shannon Power. There's more Informer tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. Coming up next on Joy 94.9 is Matt Renwick with the news, followed by Outtakes.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.